Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday, January 17th, 2011. Once again, I'm your host, PK, and I'll be talking about a few interesting things tonight. Also, you can send me emails at pkbbs2@gmail.com. Okay, there's a lot in the news. I'm just going to discuss this, the tragic shooting out in Arizona very briefly, which the liberals mostly are wetting their pants on. I'm surprised how they've tried to link this to talk radio so much in the conservative message and the Tea Party, when I've always thought of it as a metaphor, even one that comes from the left about they're going to, you know, take this person out. I always thought it meant by, you know, the vote and directing their anger at that person and voting them out and getting their fellow people who are on the same page to, you know, get rid of them. But the left has made it, and the liberals have made it into this, you know, personal attack on the rhetoric of those who are opposed to Obama. I just, you know, find it quite laughable. Plus, once again, this idiot that shot these people had some serious mental issues. I mean, his parents knew about it. That day, his dad chased him outside in the desert with the kid had a black bag, or I don't know what he had in that, maybe some of the weaponry. But, you know, this happens quite frequently. There was, you know, there was telltale signals or signs, and nobody followed through on it. And then, you know, the tragedies happened. And I believe that a polite society, an armed society, is a polite society. So had there been other armed citizens there, they could have hopefully taken this guy out a lot quicker. I understand there weren't hardly any police there. Where were they at? So, you know, like I said, once again, they had some clues and cues about this guy, and he slipped through. And I think it was rather needlessly he slipped through. Plus, I kind of resent the fact that they, you know, that this politician, she was, you know, she was seriously wounded. I just don't put a politician's life any more, to me, is no more important than a regular person's, like the 9-year-old girl who died or anybody else. There, you know, it was a tragedy for all involved, and I'll never put a damn politician or a bureaucrat in a special category. I don't care if they're elected by the people. They're no better than anybody else. They're no better than a factory worker or a farmer or a casino dealer. It's just, you know, I don't buy into that nonsense. So, yeah, it's a very tragic thing. But as a strong supporter of gun rights and gun ownership, I, you know, still reject gun control and gun confiscation. I don't like a lot of the crime, obviously, that comes from handguns, but as I'll relentlessly always remind my listeners and the world, too, is that the drug war is one of the main problems of a lot of the killings with handguns, and, of course, the drug war, people kill to buy their drugs, or they're caught in a drug war, or they take part in drug wars with rival gangs and whatnot, and this leads to a lot more needless violence, crime, death, and murder. We see what's happening in Mexico. It's so sad. I love Mexico. Been there many times. The U.S. has exported its drug war. It's intimidated other countries like Colombia and whatnot, so you see this tragedy in Mexico. I mean, the numbers, what is it, 30,000 in the last few years? You know what, it'll soon approach the number lost, American lives lost in the Vietnam War. Not that American lives, very few have been lost in Mexico, but just if you're looking at numbers, the numbers in the Vietnam War were like, what were they, like 58,000? I'm pretty close. You know, at the rate they're going in Mexico, it could be very close to the same in a few years. And, you know, those drug gangs got some balls, but I'm not sympathetic to them, but I see what they're doing. They're not going to be intimidated by government, and they're very powerful, and they strike back. I would strike back at them by ending the drug war. That they would collapse soon after. Drug prices would fall. The crime and violence would subside. You know, it would take a little while, but it would definitely subside, just like what happened in Prohibition. You know, the massive payoffs, the massive graft, and U.S. politicians and bureaucrats know that, but they keep it going. Both parties keep it going. And why is that? Because cops, bureaucrats, and politicians, they are addicted to the drug war. The more funding, asset forfeiture, and all this money, and all our tax money, or a big, huge chunk of it, continues to go down this government rat hole. You know, unwinnable war on drugs, as are the other wars. These other wars, which I'll again list, are unwinnable. The war on poverty, the war on cancer, the war on crime, the war on AIDS, the war on tobacco, the war on terrorism. Those are just quote-unquote well-meaning wars that government prosecutes, and they never win. It continues to throw money, again, down a government rat hole. It's time to stand up to this crap. I would love to, like I've mentioned before, to nullify most all federal law and then secede from this union, because Washington is a cesspool of corruption. It can't be reformed. The Republicans in the Tea Party, I don't believe, will reform it. You know, if they even think about raising that debt limit, that's ridiculous to raise that debt limit. Raising the debt limit gives the heroin addict another pound of heroin for a fix, gives the alcoholic, you know, many more bottles of whiskey, wine, and beer to continue their, you know, their addictions, their bad habits. So, in fact, that's one of the first things Reagan did after he was elected. He pressured his Republican Congress to raise the debt limit. And what happened? When Reagan took office, the debt was like about $60 billion. When he left office, it was like $250 billion. So he was a big spender. You know, and Reagan's rhetoric, his performance never met his rhetoric. I mean, this is the guy that said government is the problem, not the solution, and all these eloquent speeches he gave against, you know, big government and more government intervention, and, you know, and a lot of it I have to agree with, but he turns around and escalates this drug war on a massive scale, which led to more prison building, more nonviolent criminals, unquote, quote-unquote criminals, in prison for drug dealing and drug possession. So he made this whole thing worse, and he's supposedly for smaller government. Besides the fact that in 83, he and Greenspan and company, they when they studied a Social Security fix, they ended up, you know, raising withholding taxes, Social Security taxes. So he gave us tax increases also. So I don't buy into the Reagan myth at all. Yes, he had some good speeches, but his rhetoric never met his performance, and he was a big spending, big government, so-called conservative. Anyway, moving along, I wanted to talk about something that I've known about for years. It's rather laughable. I contend that in America, two of the lost subjects are history and geography, including especially world history and world geography. And it's to our detriment, actually, because unbeknownst to a lot of Americans, there is a huge world outside of our borders. And like I like to sarcastically say, I am an American who actually knows world geography. I actually know world history. And I know that the rest of the world knows more about America than America knows about the world. I love that saying, like only an American would get off an airplane in a foreign country and say, look at all the foreigners here. I say this because, and especially if you were to say this to a person you just met from a different country, if you say that you're an American who actually knows world geography, and like I said, if you know that there's a large world outside of our borders, you'll immediately be what's the word? They will take you in. They will immediately like where you're coming from, because there's this conception amongst a lot of people from Europe and whatnot, Britain, that Americans, they sometimes tread lightly around Americans because they know Americans are very naive or clueless about the rest of the world. And I've seen this so many times. Now, all these criticisms about Americans, I'm not attacking America now or its institutions per se. I am attacking the slothfulness or the people who just don't care about the rest of the world. Well, they should care because things are changing, folks. The economy's changing. The way the world is changing. Economic and trade blocks are changing. And I am not a globalist. I do not believe in globalization as it's being proposed and carried out by the globalists. I'm all for free trade amongst countries and nations and individuals, but I'm against the global concept of trade and its offshoots, NAFTA, CAFTA, the World Trade Organization, the UN, all these government-managed trade bodies which primarily help the politically connected. I'm partial to what Austrian School of Economics Thomas DiLorenzo has said years ago. He said that what is popularly referred to as the free enterprise system is actually the interventionist welfare warfare state, which means, of course, that it's the government-regulated, the globalist schemes of their method of trade and investment, which is not really capitalistic because these people are not capitalistic. They're more or less, as if these globalists are more like global socialists. It's, capitalism for everybody else and socialism for themselves, so they're on the gravy train. And that includes our massive military-industrial complex and all of the private contractors in Iraq, especially Iraq. Of course, it's all wrapped up in the flag and patriotism, but they're all gorging at the tax trough. Yes, most of them are private companies, but their funding is coming through our taxes. They're it's that government-industry partnership. It's the government gravy train. It's their sort of guaranteed profits and guaranteed income. It's the corporate socialist state or corporate fascism, which I oppose, all good libertarians oppose. I do take issue with people calling Obama a socialist. He is more of a corporate socialist or a corporatist in the Mussolini tradition of the blurring the line between government and big business, where Mussolini sort of outlawed strikes and unions, and however they made it difficult, as I understand it, for industry to fire people. So you had this government-managed economy where they really blur the line between government and industry, and you get the corporate fascist state. And they were opposed to free market capitalism. So that is not the path that I would go down. FDR looked up to Mussolini. In fact, Mussolini, I forget his, he had an emblem for his method, and FDR soon had the NRA, the National Recovery Act, and his failed schemes to get us out of the Depression. I'm all for trade, global trade, free enterprise, the free market, but not the globalists, their scheme on things and the way they want to do it, which only benefits them and their politically connected companies. And unfortunately, more and more businesses think it's just fine if they get on the government gravy train. Of course, they don't know what lies ahead with this government, what they're up to, and they're just trying to save their own butts or feather their own nests. So anyway, back to geography and history. Now, those are two subjects I always liked, regardless of what I learned in school. I liked history books. I enjoyed geography. I liked travel, especially outside the U.S. And when you travel, geography and history really come in handy. And I've asked friends and whatnot, did they like history? And often I hear, no, they don't care for it. Or they didn't like their teachers. Well, to me, it transcends goes way beyond the teachers you have. It's just a general interest in knowing about the past, and which can help you know about the future or decisions you make or mistakes to be avoided. So, in fact, probably, I wonder how many Americans know where America got its name. Just to remind our listeners, America took its name from Amerigo Vespucci, who was a 16th century Italian cartographer, which is a map maker and explorer. I believe he came to the New World about twice, and somehow he got his name put on our country, so it became America from Amerigo Vespucci. So, you know, America's a melting pot. Most Americans come from Asia, Europe, and Africa. And it was named after an Italian. And so it has, of course, it has a massive foreign influence. And, of course, you know, we became our own country, but I'm very aware of the influence of Europe and other countries, Asia, and all these sort of things that come from history. Now, again, I was good in history and geography in school, but I admit that I'm an idiot in math and science. That's not my bag. I was never really good in those. I think I have a mental block. Plus, I'm lazy. But, and I absolutely see the need for math and science. That's why I really appreciate technicians and scientists and doctors and engineers and all those people who know math and science. Very important for our economy and our well-being, for medicine and technology and everything else, many things that we take for granted. So back to geography and actually history too. They, you know, they crisscross and they're equally important. When we look at the 19th century, the 19th century was Britain's. You know, it was the peak of its empire. It had a global trade system. In fact, it wasn't military strength that held the British Empire together. It was trade. Yes, it had a military force and a great navy that, you know, controlled the coastlines and the tributaries and those parts of many countries. And of course, I don't agree with any of that. I deplore any of the brutality of empires and colonialism. But I do like the parts that it get ignored, like spreading a free press, the good aspects of democracy, which would be voting and democracy, the marketplace where every penny spent is a vote for the product of a consumer's choice. Also, things that the British Empire gave the world was built up the infrastructure, medicine, technology, schools, education. All those things. Those are the things that I like. To trade, transportation, communications. All those things I applaud, and I think that they outweigh the negative side. Again, the 19th century was Britain's. It was its zenith. I'm a big fan of the British Empire, and they probably did a better job than we ever could. I'm totally opposed to the American Empire with its 700 military bases throughout the world in over 130 foreign countries. I'm totally against all that. The 19th century is Britain's. Okay, moving on to the 20th century. The 20th century became the U.S. century. Our involvement in wars, especially World War I and World War II, which I oppose both, by the way. The more I study history, I see that every war in the 20th century and then at the end of the 19th century, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, and now this other mess in Iraq and Afghanistan, all unnecessary, all staged by the globalists of the day. Yes, there were other countries with dictators doing bad things, especially back in the 30s and the 40s, but they were enabled and they were antagonized by foreign policy, especially from FDR, for example, in Japan, cutting off their oil, embargoing their shipments of raw materials. FDR did a lot of things to maneuver Japan to attack the U.S., especially when the U.S. had already broken the Japanese code prior to Pearl Harbor and in 1939 or 1940 against the advice of some of his admirals, Roosevelt moved the Pacific Fleet from our west coast in California to Pearl Harbor. So these were ways to incite Japan and lure Japan into firing the first shot and attacking the U.S. And of course, then he got the whole country behind his tremendous fraud. Meanwhile, he was trying to get us involved in war in World War II in Europe. So anyway, I don't want to get into this whole U.S. involvement in war again, but the 20th century was the century for the U.S. Now, we're 10 years into, going on 11 years into the 21st century, and what do we see? Well, we see the rise of Asia and China, and rightly so. They're hardworking, intelligent people, and like I say, the U.S. does not have a monopoly on hard work, education, technology, invention, innovation. The questions I like to ask are, well, does America have the highest math scores? Does it have the highest scores in science? Do we have the most engineers? Do we have the lowest unemployment? Do we have the most honest politicians and bureaucrats? Do we have the lowest debt, ladies and gentlemen? I think not. Do we make the best cars? Do we make the best electronics? Do we make the best TVs? So things are changing, which is all the more reason to know more about foreign cultures, especially India and China. These are two nations with massive populations that are coming up, and their people need jobs and they need work. So global trade is shifting. There's more investment going to Asia. I am very pessimistic about the U.S. in the future. I'm very worried about the direction the economy is going, the direction Obama has taken us, and I will not let Bush off the hook because he was the architect of these bailouts and the first $700 billion. So he was Hoover and Obama's FDR. He's just, Obama's doing it at a larger, faster pace. But the stimulus isn't working. It's not a way, it doesn't lead to, more permanent types of investment, innovation, technology, and real employment. It's artificial. It's more government employment. It's growing government, growing the state, you know, at all levels. This is, and any of these make work jobs or these, what do they call it, shovel jobs, a lot of that's just temporary. They talk about the infrastructure. Well, I'm all for that too, but that is not a job, or it shouldn't be the job of the federal government. That should be the job of the states. But meanwhile, we're spending like $2 billion a week overseas on these stupid wars. This is the 10th year of the war in Afghanistan. That's longer than, you know, World War One and World War Two. It's longer than Korea or Vietnam. It's almost longer than World War One and World War Two together. World War Two was more like 6 years, 39 to 45, and World War One was 4 years. So this war will probably outlast those two. It's longer than the Vietnam War. U.S. troops came ashore in Vietnam in large numbers in March 1965, and the war ended, I think, in the spring of 1973, my senior year in high school. So that's about 8 years. Well, this is going on to 10. And, of course, they're building more bases. And what are they going to do, plunder more of Afghanistan's mineral wealth instead of, you know, honestly negotiating and trading with it? You got this U.S. puppet, of course, in Iraq and Afghanistan, Karzai, who's rather corrupt and rather kooky. And his brother's rumored to be one of the drug kingpins or involved in all that. So you got all this, you know, heroin and poppy production, which is distorting things. And I'm sure the CIA is involved in that, the CIA being our shadow government. But back to Asia and China. Americans should know more about China and Asian culture because they are in India, because those are two massive trading partners. A lot of our jobs have gone overseas to these places. Now, a lot of this is what we call a worldwide division of labor. Some of this would just naturally happen because of shifting in wealth and capital and investment. However, I think a lot of jobs were lost overseas, American jobs and facilities, because of the climate here of taxes, excessive taxes, regulation, and especially unions. Now, I'm pro-employee, but I make no secret about the fact that I'm anti-union, but I'm pro-employee. I mean, unions have caused a big problem in this country because of their strikes, but probably more so because of their threats of strikes. They've been able to impose above-market wages on American employers. So consequently, over time, now we had factories moving to Mexico, which was a way for them to use their lower labor costs to compete with the Asian labor costs, probably especially China. However, people say these Chinese are working for, pennies a day. Well, they have lower costs of living. It's a cycle they have to go through. They have to go through to become a more of a capitalistic country. They need to go through these growing pains. I like to say that besides its ridiculous Marxist government, one of China's main problems is pollution. So, I hope they can get that together. Plus, they're one child. Even though they have a huge population, their one-child policy has distorted, I think, birth rates and shortages. Maybe, I don't know if it's males or females, but that's a problem for the future for them. But anyway, as I'm fond of saying humorously, China, as I understand it, it's easier or even freer to open or start a business in China than it is in the U.S. So what's it going to take in the U.S., Uncle Sam? Is it going to take a Marxist government in the U.S. to impose a free market economy on our country? I mean, that's sort of laughable and humorous, but I wonder if it's shaping up that way. So, and then you have the rise of India. India, I have some dear Indian friends. I understand the culture. I respect the culture. If I can patronize the Indian folks for a moment here, they tend to be good, strong family structures, well-educated, good employment, hard-working, intelligent people, as are other Asian people, but I was listing India at the moment. And one of India's biggest pluses is that English is its second language. Some cases it's first language, and we can thank the British for this. So China, however, is learning English. And probably pretty quickly. So instead of worrying so much about these two countries and resenting all the jobs sent overseas, we should embrace knowing more about them and getting them or others to invest back in our country. Now, in my world, the corporate tax rate would be very small. If it's 28% today, or something near that, I believe, in my world, it's like 2%. They'll pay 2%. That way the liberals won't wet their pants, and they'll know that the evil businessmen are paying some taxes. Now, I'm not pro-business per se. I'm pro-free enterprise. I'd rather have the climate where there's micro-taxes and micro-regulations so American business can thrive. And again, micro-taxes and micro-regulations in small government or smaller government greatly led to America's growth and prosperity. So I would like to get back to those days where of smaller micro taxes and micro regulations. This would greatly help our economy. People would, and foreigners would want to invest in our economy, and you would see lower unemployment and people going back to work. But with this distortion of the marketplace by constant government intervention, taxes, regulations, red tape everywhere, it's just strangling the economy. America's economy has emphysema. And I've been saying for years, Americans are resting on their laurels. They're thinking back to World War II and automobiles and Detroit and all this great stuff. Well, things are changing, folks. Everybody outside of America is not dumb, stupid, and poor. There's a lot of intelligent, hard-working people out there, and everybody doesn't want to come and live in America. They have great lives in many of their other countries, first-world countries, especially Europe, and certain South American countries and certain Asian countries. So the best thing American can do is clean up our own house and take all that wasted capital and investment from all these ridiculous foreign bases, which is just, you know, bleeding us so much, and these wars. That money should be in our economy, in our own pockets, being invested in our own country, and not taxed away and given to the same government, by the way, for its other schemes. We should get back to constitutional government. I spoke the last couple of my shows about my secession solution. For those of you who are fortunate enough to hear my brilliant wisdom on this, I laid out a plan to rescue America from itself, but it would include nullification and, you know, secession, peaceful secession, but to restore our republic. I'm not very big on democracy. I'm partial to the concept of democracy as like two or three wolves and one sheep voting on what they want for breakfast. I see a very narrow limit for democracy, which democracy in my world, influenced by Austrian School of Economics, of course, would be the first of all, the peaceful way we elect our so-called leaders, democracy through voting, and second, the all-important voting in the marketplace, where every penny or every dollar is a vote. If somebody goes to McDonald's today, they make an oral contract and they vote with their money for a Big Mac or a salad or a iced tea. The democracy of the marketplace. So anyway, back to geography and history. Most Americans, if you had a globe or a map and you ask them to find Japan or China, most probably couldn't find it. I think that when you see Jay Leno, if you've seen him out asking questions, and he's very good-natured about it, I'm more brutal about it. I mean, I don't do it, but the response he gets from people, you know, I guess young, middle-aged, and older, especially I think some, like a lot of the younger people are middle-aged. I mean, they're clueless about the rest of the world. You know, they're all into their, you know, their iPods and their Blackberries and their video games and all this other nonsense, and there's, you know, they're in the dark about the rest of the world. Meanwhile, the economy's changing. Their job opportunities are dwindling. They should know about other countries so they can maybe learn more about how to expand the economy and grow it and understand more about foreign investment and see what's happening, because it's going to be a bigger concept in their lifetime than those of us who are older and or close to retirement, although a lot of people probably won't be able to retire because they'll have to be working because they lost their savings or this and that through the tragic economy, while at the same time the employment may not be even available for them. So in the meantime, the best thing a lot of Americans can do is work for less. Everybody has the right to work for less, and prices should be allowed to fall, especially housing and things in the marketplace. But I fear the inflation that's coming along thanks to Bernanke with his quantitative easing. I mean, what a lie that is. It's just more inflation through credit expansion and or creating more money out of thin air, backed by nothing. And a lot of these idiots like Paul Krugman, I mean, how did he ever learn anything about economics or win the Nobel Prize? That's as laughable as Obama winning the Peace Prize while his CIA drones kill more innocent people. So, anyway, the thing about geography is we should know where other countries are that are manufacturing goods that are sold in this country. And we should know about history of other countries and our own history, which helps us have a more enlightened view of the world, because when you travel a lot, you have, especially outside of the U.S., when I speak to traveling, primarily speaking of outside of the U.S., you get an interesting and often much different take on the world and or the U.S. role in it. I've had very good, interesting conversations with people in Europe, in Mexico, South America, Australia. I've been fortunate enough to be to a lot of these places. And you get a different view of America. I mean, yes, I'm happy and thankful and proud, to be from this country. I'm very ashamed of what the federal government has done here and abroad. But my criticisms, again, are a different issue from knocking America per se. And I always state the difference. Again, I said before, if I was going to, they've accused Obama of apologizing. Well, I would apologize too with this important clarification, although I'm sure the neocons would censor this important clarification out of it. And my thing would be that, yes, I would apologize for what the federal government has done. Repeat, the federal government, not the American people per se, not our country per se, what the federal government has been up to. They don't hate us for our freedom, despite Bush's lies and distortions of the truth. They hate us for our interventions, politically and militarily. That is why this country is disliked, and Bush and Obama have done a lot to move that along. It's just this arrogance towards the rest of the world, and I'm ashamed of that, and that's not who I am or the America that I want to am proud to live in. That is not the America that I, you know, want, and which is why I choose to criticize the mentality of a lot of Americans who, you know, Frank Zappa said, America drinks and goes home. Well, you know, there's not much depth to it. And just thinking that if you grow up in America, you're going to have it made, or we're the best, or we're the greatest. Well, I don't like to even hear that or say that, because it's changing. It's crumbling, and other countries are coming up. In fact, those who say, oh, the Chinese and Indians are making, you know, 50 cents a day. Well, they make more than that. Their cost of living is different. And by the way, what happened to the wages, for example, in Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan? Their wages have come up. They've come up. In fact, Japan outsources to China and India. So, I think it was Lou Rockwell from the Mises Institute has said that outsourcing is a natural phenomenon of the worldwide division of labor, meaning that other countries end up producing what they can produce best with their populations and their resources. And we should all trade together, and it's not really a competition. It's yes, companies compete and countries compete through their businesses, but it's not a competition in the sense that this country is better than that country per se. So yes, I'm proud of America, but I don't wave the flag, and I am especially opposed to this nonsensical concept of American exceptionalism. as if other countries aren't ahead of us in math scores and science scores. I mean, if anything, it's a wake-up call for America to reestablish our republic and investment in our economy. Now, that a lot of these jobs are shifting overseas, perhaps America would have more jobs created in more higher tech industries and technology, and maybe pollution technology, which could be exported. But things are changing, and back to history and geography, we should know more about these other countries. We're going to be doing business with them. There's another word you should know. It's a, what do they call it, an acronym? The word is BRIC. B as in boy, BRIC. BRIC stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China. Those four countries are a massive trading bloc coming forth. And there's no need for the federal government, the U.S. federal government, to antagonize or threaten Russia, especially Russia or China, with sailing our fleet out there near China. Again, how would we like it if China was, you know, putting their fleet in our, you know, Caribbean Sea or off the coast, our coast in international waters? We wouldn't like it. So, you know, this should change. There's no need to put missiles in Eastern Europe facing Russia to antagonize them. The best thing we can do with these other countries is in trade with them. We don't have to like them. I don't like a lot of what their governments are up to, but again, I don't necessarily dislike their people. Their people need jobs. Their people need to eat. They love their families. They want, you know, peace and employment. So the best thing we can do is foster trade, because trade between nations and countries and individuals and businesses is a great thing. It creates more harmony. It expands the marketplace. These are all good things. But governments get in the way. They distort things. They lie. They you know, they continually prosecute wars. This country's been on such a war footage, where it's involved in so many other countries, civil wars, all these kind of things. It's, you know, it's got to stop, folks. It's bankrupting us. So, anyway, back to BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China. These countries are coming up. Brazil is coming up. And hopefully these countries will have, you know, fewer labor problems. Now, you know, I'm not oppressing workers at all, and I believe in contracts, and I'm not opposed to strikes per se, but I find unions to be very monopolistic and anti-competitive, and they derive most of their power from government privilege. And governments do this because there's more votes, there's more workers than there are employers, so, you know, they appeal to their sympathies and they play them against each other. I like the late great Joe Sobrin's comparison of need, greed, and compassion. Need is when you want someone else's money or wealth. Greed is when you want to hang on to your own wealth. And compassion is the sentiment of the politician who takes from A to give to B, who uses pressure groups and special interest groups to further their aims. And so that is the need, greed, and compassion, the way I see it in the modern world. And, of course, you know, I reject class warfare. I reject all this nonsensical stuff put up by the left, especially, or liberals, who... you know, I like the definition of a liberal is willing to give away everything he doesn't own or she doesn't own. You know, they want it. They're willing to give. Oh, great, great. Who's on line one? I'd like to say hello.
Who do you have? Is this PK?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, hey, this is Tommy PK. How you doing this evening?
This is Tommy?
Yes.
I'm doing fine.
Good, good deal. I was just wondering if you were taking any calls for anybody to chime in there and share in your conversation there, if possible.
Sure.
I was listening to your discussion there and brought up several things in my mind about, you know, different viewpoints here. And
Can I ask you what part of the country you're calling from? I don't need to know the state or what area you're calling from.
The southeast.
Southeast
part of the United States.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And
what would you like? What would you like to? Do you have a question or?
Oh, just discussion. A little. Had some thoughts on what you were saying there because I.
What's on your mind?
I see it. Pardon me.
What's on your mind? Let me know.
Yeah, I just see what's happening here in reference to what you're saying a little bit differently to perhaps shed a little light on a larger picture because the Matrix movie what appears is not what seems to be is not what it is type of thing.
Of course.
I know you're been around, seasoned in life a little bit, truly everything is in reverse of what it appears to be, and it works out every single time that way, but it's hard convincing people of this because we wake up into the Matrix every day, and it looks real, and it feels and seems real. But I'd like to say that, first of all, the president does not run the country. The Illuminati government, they run the world, and these freaks keeping the wars going. And although Obama, in this case, and I'm not even political, he is a white knight in dark skin working at the Black House to working for our release from these warlords running the planet. Now, he just can't tell anyone that. But he has surrounded himself with all these enemies that everybody is pointing the finger at that are going to all go downtown at the very last minute. And it's the only way it works out. The world is tired of suffering of death, disease, and destruction, and there's a whole new structure in the background ready to replace all this criminal cabal operation, all set up, and it's just the best kept secret, you might say. Nobody knows the day or the time, but the world is about to get very good and not the other way around. Despite what the Illuminati news feeds are telling everyone, because everything is controlled, and there are no mistakes about anything. They built the Titanic, for example, these elites, for the sole purpose of sinking it. They built up the United States way back, knowing full well they were going to break it down. They build things to break it down, and that's what's happening now in the United States with the money and everything else, is all the old structures that have been keeping everything propped up in this illusion are now come tumbling down for something new and better to replace it, because there cannot be a vacuum.
But it sounds like you and I might be on the same page about a lot of things.
Perhaps so. It's very interesting. I'm not necessarily, I'm not political or any way, or take sides or anything. I try to look at the large. I'll always ask the larger questions in my life why we're here, what are we doing, what is this about, and nothing ever made sense.
We sure didn't learn it in school, did we?
No, they in fact did.
It's a facade. The government textbooks. The government, the victor usually writes the textbooks, and this is the propaganda we've gotten. Even Apple Pie and Chevrolet wave the flag USA. It's here. It's a distortion.
Exactly. I just don't buy their stuff. A lot of people now, it's all, everything is a false flag to get to distract our attention to what want us to see, to distract it away from, what they don't want you to see. And it's just the most nefarious thing you ever heard of. And it's like the saying goes, the more we do to you, the less you seem to believe it. The bigger the lie, the easier it is to get you to believe it.
That's why we have to preserve the integrity and the freedom of the internet, because that is what they want to control next. And they're going to use terrorism and child porn. That, to me, that is their main wedge to get in and to try to control that. And Lieberman and company, Joe Lieberman, they want to be able to shut it down they want to try to decide for us what's good or bad as far as the internet. They don't like the internet, and I like the internet. I want it left alone.
Well, I totally agree, and this is what they were afraid of way, way back in time, is that, the silicon was one of the last components, these Anunnaki warlords running the planet through the Illuminati needed for their component to try to get off the planet, because they got quarantined here on this prison planet, this slave species. And silicon was the last thing, and they could see way back thousands of years ago this time was coming, and that silicon was one of their last components to get the internet going and their other technology, and that it was kind of a catch-22 form, that they needed it, but yet the internet was going to let communication go exponential, and then people could start talking and word would get around about all the lies, and that's happen, and that's why they want to shut it down. But they're not going to do it, and regardless of what they say and they talk about and try to scare everyone, because the earth is being managed. There's a highly orchestrated, engineered event going downtown and behind the scenes that is just so unbelievable that the world, the masses of people cannot know, because they would have heart attacks. So
those of us
that are awake realize this, and we're helping to facilitate to bring in the light, to raise the frequency of the darkness to expose it, and that's what's happening. These are the last days, and they're pulling out all their stops to keep everybody afraid, and that's the only tool they have left. And when the time is right, the most carefully considered thing is the consciousness of the masses, so that they don't fall over and have a heart attack when all this good news comes out.
It's going to take the minority of people like us to influence
right.
the masses. It comes through us. And also, you mentioned Obama earlier. He's just a puppet for the Illuminati, but he's a very and you mentioned skin color, which is important, because he's a very willing globalist. Obama, I don't see a mulatto mixed race person. When I see him speak, I see a smooth talking lawyer who's clueless about economics and political economy. He may as well be a dark skinned, blue blood, skull and bones member.
Well, he's not.
Am I right? Am I right? He may as well be a dark skinned, blue blood, skull and bones member.
Well, he could be in another time and place, but considering the time that we're in, he's not Illuminati bloodline, and think about it. He's a man of color, and I'm not prejudiced in any way.
No, it's relevant, but he was chosen. He's part of the globalist scheme. If it wasn't him, it would be McCain, and the military-industrial complex loves McCain.
I don't think that way with particularly Obama in this time period, because he's a man to bring the world together. The world is about to come together. You got to look at it this way. The world is about to come together. But the Illuminati, while they're running the show, he's got to wear a few hats and play the game, and he's the one everybody gets to point the finger at to blame, while the Black Pope, the Vatican, the British Royal Crown, the secret government, and all these freaks running the world, he's got to do what they tell him what he's told to do, and he can only make a few certain moves. But he's able, while he is there, to put things in place, to set things up in the background while he takes the hits and the blame of having the privilege of the position. And you don't get to be president and they don't have dirt on you, because if you screw up, they can make you look real bad. So that's the price to play the game. Now, I understand he practiced many, many thousand lifetimes to be where he is today, if you want to believe that, to bring the world together in these momentous times. There's a whole the biggest cover-up of all time, PK, is the fact that you and me and everyone is a galactic human. And the other cover-up is the fact that we are part of a galactic citizenship, and it's about to be known, and that's what they've been covering up. Not the government, but the secret, all the guys behind there.
CIA or the Masters of Deception?
Well, them too, but there's a... comes from the Vatican. The Black Pope is pretty much, whoever. It's top down, but nobody gets to know. It's plausible deniability. Everybody just does their job. But what's interesting, too, is this thing about the money. It's pretty strange, and that's what they use for the main control device over humanity, is the money. And
that's what I was
going to
ask you. Who has more power, Obama or the head of the Federal Reserve?
The Illuminati tells all of them what to do.
So when you say Illuminati, don't you essentially mean the Rothschild, Rockefeller ambit?
Yeah. Trilateral, Bilderbergs, the CFR.
CFR, right.
All those guys, the committee of, and the bankers, yes.
Didn't Kennedy step on their toes back in the day, and that's why the CIA whacked him?
Yeah. And so everybody's pressing Obama for disclosure now, but his life is at stake, and he's been trying to, he's got to be very careful. And regardless of what maybe Kennedy wanted to do to bring out the disclosure and the new real money, they you could have ideas all day long, but they won't let you. When think about it, these guys, Warren Buffett, Ted Turner, Donald Trump, Bill Gates, you name it, these guys with the big money that could really change the world, they can't really do any good with their money to help the world. They can only appear to give the impression
right.
that they can do good. And so, because there's 6,000 free energy patents locked up, they're about to come out. Tesla Technology 100 years ago had a device about the size of your computer modem that could power up your whole house. Why aren't we using this? They run off. They can get to the moon in an hour and a half. They got bases on the moon, bases on Mars. They've been all every planets. Want the people? They could have plugged like Stephen Greer says. They could have gone, they got the technology, anti-gravitic technology, could have gone down and plugged that Gulf oil spill up in 30 minutes. But, see, once they answer one question about UFOs or ETs, for example, that opens a whole can of worms to a whole bunch of other cans of worms. They just can't go down that road. So they just deny.
Right. And, well, you mentioned the world is going to come together. How do you see that happening?
Well, it's there's a super wave coming. It's science. And coming from the center of the universe, the galaxy, it's just photonic energy. Your DNA is simply information, light, and light is simply information. And we're getting blasted, everybody on the planet right now, to raise the DNA, the frequency level, to drown out this dark. It's all in your thinking. Thoughts are things. Thoughts out manifest your... into our outer world as matter. When you think a thought, you create a molecule. And if the Illuminati and everybody could keep you afraid in a lower vibrating frequency in a place of judgment like the religions taught everyone, then you couldn't ascend because you couldn't catch the super wave when it came because you couldn't be in a good mood. And if they got you drowning in debt and you're worried about how you're going to pay your rent, then you can't be in a place of love to love your neighbor and want to put down. The wars are going to stop, all of them, and we cannot evolve out of this mess until we have peace on Earth. Otherwise, you cannot have a meeting of the minds with anybody to because everybody's too incompetent to be able to do anything about anything.
Uh-huh.
2 million people marching on Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., couple year and a half ago for a tax protester day were rendered useless, incompetent,
yeah.
hopeless and helpless to do anything about anything. Now, I had a plan. I mean, I could have told those 2 million people to stay home. I'll send you all an email, and I just want you to read one paragraph all at the same time at the top of the hour for 8 hours and save all your time, money, and gas and energy from going down there, and you could have moved the mountain. I mean, those 2 million people could have torched that place if they wanted to, but they were...
Well, I'm all for a revolution. I prefer a peaceful revolution, or we just refuse to cooperate.
I'm not. It's your thinking. If you just get in a good mood, that raises the frequency, and see, each of us are like a white lymph node blood corpuscle for your immune system on a planet. Each of us are complicit in the crimes against humanity that we find ourselves complaining about, and each of us have to clear our own, say, karma, which is your feelings that come up from within you, the fears, all these things. If we do that, then you could lower a tidal wave by 50 feet.
Well, I hope you're right, Tommy. I'm sorry I got to interrupt here. I'm getting at the end of my show this week, but I thank you for calling. You mentioned some interesting things. Some of it is a little bit beyond my scope or where you're coming from, but we're definitely on the same page of friendship and wanting to solve things, and we are definitely not part of the globalist camp.
Right.
Thanks for calling, Tommy. I appreciate it.
Joe, I'll check back with you, and we could talk about some more things. You're doing good work over there, and you have a good night. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, and I'd like to say thank you to bbsradio.com for... helping me have my Third Stream View program every Monday night, 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 Central, 12 o'clock Eastern. Thanks again for Seth helping me out here, and I'm signing off for tonight, and I'll be back again next Monday evening for Third Stream View. Thank you, everybody. Have a good one. Bye-bye.